Coming up on Golf Today, Celine Boutier is a major champ at home in France at the Amundi Evian Championship. How did she run away from everybody along the shores of Lake Geneva? And speaking of runaways, Alabama's Lee Hodges has won the 3M Open by a touchdown plus the extra point for his first PGA Tour win, wire to wire with great style. What is next for Hodges? Another Bama alum is struggling, however. Can Justin Thomas find his form in time for the Ryder Cup, or should Captain Zach look elsewhere? We're taking on the meaty topics on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Monday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine, and it's been a minute. How are you, pal?
I'm pretty good. I'm coming off what was my favorite day of golf of the year.
Yeah.
Surprising as that sounds, mainly because of watching the weather at the Senior Open at Royal Porthcawl. And you know what this game has done to me, Damon. Misery loves company. There is nothing that pleased me more than seeing the best senior golfers in the world get battered around Royal Porthcawl, by the way.
What's
Monkey
the worst?
Shoots 88. And it wasn't the worst score of the day.
It was tough to watch. I've played in like a downpour. Me and my good buddy Mark Saxon, I mean, we were like mortal enemies on the golf course. Rainstorm. We're out in the Bay Area, Chuck Corica, and no one wants to go in. None of us is going to say it's too wet to play. You know, it's a pillow fight, bogeys and double bogeys mostly. But I tell you what, we love this game. You stick it out and you play.
I played once in the Sagamore up in Lake George, upstate New York, where it started to snow during the round. But my worst one was in the old course in St. Andrews, a perfectly sunny day until the 14th hole. And right after, I lost a ball. Skies open, squall breaks in, my umbrella snaps on two. I couldn't even feel my hands when the putt went in on 18. But the view through the bar window about 10 minutes later was bright sunshine again.
If it's nay rain, nay wind, it's nay golf.
Yeah,
or something.
I don't really subscribe to that theory myself.
Well, it was all sunny skies for Celine Boutier. What a win it was for her. Wins by six. Final round of 68 for Celine Boutier. Absolutely getting the job done. She's the third French woman ever to win a major championship. Catherine Lacoste won the U.S. Women's Open in 1967 as an amateur. And Patricia Mounier-Labou won the Chevron Championship in 2003 as Celine meets the press.
Very overwhelmed. I was just looking at the names on that trophy, and I just think I don't think I'm realizing yet. I just feel like it's been such a goal, and more like a dream of mine for so long. And just to be able to pull it off this week has been definitely unexpected, but just over the moon.
When you were overcome with support from your family who are here in attendance and your friends, what were the emotions you had on that 18 green finishing out the final hole?
I was just so focused on, you know, getting the job done and just making pars, hitting good shots, that I was trying not to, think ahead and not let myself think about that already because it wasn't done yet. Just to be able, like with the prize ceremony and just seeing all the fans and the spectators cheering me on, to be able to, you know, add a French flag to the list of winners is just unbelievable. I just can't express really how I feel, but a little bit of overwhelmed.
What it means for you to win in France, in front of the French people and in front of your fans? So.
It's everything. I mean, it's definitely, like I said, it was like the biggest dream of mine. If I was gonna win, you know, one tournament, it had to be Evian. And I just really did not expect it to be this week. But I just feel like so grateful to be able to share it with my family and with all the French spectators. They were amazing all week, just such a great amount of support and positive energy, and definitely fed off of the crowd a little bit. And I just feel super grateful to be able to, share it with the French golf community.
I don't know if you can kind of describe that walk up 18, kind of knowing you had it. I obviously had a putt still, but knowing you kind of had it in the bag, and the emotions and people yelling your name and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely trying to take it in and enjoy it. I felt a little bit overwhelmed as well, just, you know, hearing their chants and my name and just them being just so happy, you know, and I just feel like I was definitely like borderline going to cry, but I definitely like I tried to focus on my last two putts. And yeah, it's just been an amazing week.
This has been a banner year for you, Celine. You became the winningest player in French history at Drive On, and you are now the first French player to win here. What does this mean to you as and what does it mean to be one of the biggest role models here for French golf?
I mean, it's really not things I think about on my daily life. I definitely feel like it's hard to really realize that I have such an, that I would have any kind of impact in French golf or in France at all. And I'm just, you know, just so grateful to be able to have this this gift of golf, I guess, and just to be able to hopefully inspire more French players to turn pro and to try to, you know, play on the same stage. And I just feel like it's been an amazing ride. Hopefully it's not the end.
Boutier is in some rarefied air in the French Alps in terms of margins of victory at the Evian Championship. Her six-stroke win ties Lydia Ko's record. Over the last 10 years, she won by six back in 2015. Damon, to me, this, what we saw yesterday out of Celine Boutier is kind of this example of what age and experience does for a player. Her last lead in a major championship, 2019 US Women's Open, tied for the lead heading into Sunday, shoots 75, finishes tied fifth. She's got a three-shot lead going into a home game, family's there, home country, a lot of pressure. She doesn't actually stumble on it. She shoots four rounds in the 60s, the only player to do that, and canters to the victory. It makes you wonder what is actually then possible from this kind of boost going forward.
Yeah, we've seen the steps with this player. She'd had top 10 finishes in every single major going into this week, except for the Amundi Evian Championship, by her own admission, pressing a little bit, the one she wanted the most. But you're right about the resume and the career. She had three previous wins on the LPGA before this week, three wins on the Ladies European Tour, a couple of wins on the Epson Tour, four wins in college, was the number one player in the amateur, the WAGR, the World Amateur Golf Ranking. So the pieces were there, but for it to come together in the way that it did, it reminded me a bit of Nick Taylor winning in Canada and the feelings he must have had going through his body. And for her to just come out the way she did, to birdie one and two right out of the gate, no one could touch her. It was a very dominating Sunday performance.
And she showed some nerve before. If you go back to late 2021, the ShopRite LPGA Classic that she won by a single stroke, but right behind her, Jin Young Ko, Brooke Henderson, and Inbee Park. Those are three pretty big names to hold off by a single shot on a Sunday. But I'm curious what you think the Solheim Cup has done for her confidence between the player she was back in 2019 when that lead slipped away at the Country Club of Charleston to where we are now. Because she's gone 5-1-1 in two Solheim Cups before then. It's really kind of tempered her as a steely competitor out there. She just doesn't seem to be the player she was 4 or 5 years ago in those high-pressure moments. And they don't get any more high-pressure than it was yesterday.
So many players talk about Ryder Cup, Solheim Cup, President's Cup being those moments that really show them what they can do. And then even major championship pressure or LPGA pressure or PGA Tour pressure doesn't feel as bad when you're standing on the first tee of one of those events surrounded by humanity. I do think it's interesting, and we're going to ask Ron Cyrak a little bit later about the effect that college golf has had on these players. I mean, it seemed like 5 minutes ago it was Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko and Lydia Ko sprinkled in there as well. And we're in a year now where we're seeing first-time major championship winners. Great pedigree. Lilia Vu, UCLA. You know I'm going to plug her as well. But these college programs setting these players up for great success. It's making it harder and harder to find the 5, 6, 7 win season that, you know, let's be honest, people love dynasties. They love them or hate them. Tiger, Annika, New York Yankees, Lakers, Celtics. I mean, you want to see greatness, and you want to see greatness, you know, checked and put under pressure and challenged. And right now in the LPGA, we're seeing a lot of parity inside the ropes.
Never more parity. Four majors played this year. Four separate winners, one more to go. Well, as one Bama guy rises, another one is struggling. Lee Hodges left a 3M Open a winner on Sunday, but Justin Thomas, he was done Friday, and he's in a fight to make the FedEx Cup playoffs and the Ryder Cup. We're going to talk some JT coming up next.
How about Lee Hodges, winner for the first time on the PGA Tour rounds of 63, 64, 66, and 67 for, wait a minute, seven-shot victory. Gets his first win in his 65th career start, moves from 110 to projected 54th in the official world golf ranking, the highest position of his career. Let's hear from the winner.
Elated. It was just a dream week, the whole thing. I mean, I played, honestly, from Monday to Sunday, I played really good golf, even in practice rounds. The Pro-Am, I made a bunch of birdies, and then I made a bunch of birdies in the tournament without many bogeys. So it was just one of those weeks. I feel like I have a good attitude about golf in general, because it is just a game. I mean, I'm super blessed to be able to play a game for a living, man. I mean, there's a lot of people that would trade to be in my shoes. So I think I have good perspective. And yeah, last night, me and my wife, we ate dinner here, and then we went to get some ice cream, and I slept like a baby. So yeah, it was a pretty nonchalant night.
Talked about two of the greatest shots you ever hit. Can you just take us through those three woods on 6 and 12 and what you were thinking on those positions? And
yeah, it just kind of seems like one of those things that happens when you win. I had the exact same number both times and the exact same win. So I just had to hold a little three wood, and it was 257 both times, and I just had to get it up in the air and hold it. And I did them pretty well.
Explain the milkshake on the 18th green.
Yeah, so Coach Sewell, that's our Alabama thing. Anytime we won a tournament, he would take us to get milkshakes. So that was incredible that he was here and that he brought me a milkshake. I mean, that's, you can't even make that up. That's super special, something I'll remember forever.
And Lee, the first wire-to-wire winner in tournament history and first on tour since JT Poston of the 2022 John Deere Classic. Joaquin Niemann also wire-to-wire in 2022. Now, I look at this story. What struck me, Eamon, was how calm he said he was on Saturday.
Slept like a baby.
Had dinner with his wife, Savannah. They had ice cream Saturday night.
You slept a minute the night before the AT&T at Pebble last year, and you were only T2.
T2 with the pure insurance, I'll tell you what, and Sunday felt different for me. It felt like a walk in the park for Lee Hodges, and I just think it speaks to his complete confidence and control of his game. 25 birdies, led the field in birdies for the week, led it strokes gained approach, led it strokes gained tee to green. To me, this is a situation on the PGA Tour, when it's your week, it is your week.
It really is a perfect example of how numbers that don't really appear to tell a story do, in fact, tell a story. And when you look at Lee Hodges' profile out there, tee to green statistically, there's literally nothing that stands out. You know, he's 44th in strokes gained off the tee, 57th in approach. A little wobbly around the greens, 143rd there, 77th in putting. But there are 100-plus Lee Hodges on the PGA Tour, which are guys who are very, very solid. And if they get on fire at the right time, and they're opportunistic, they're right on the golf course, they can actually capitalize and essentially make a career in one week. And that's what Lee Hodges has done, because he's not only taken himself from outside the playoff bubble, he's put himself on the very cusp of being at Eastlake. And that's where, for Lee Hodges at this point in his career, that's an enormous jump to go from thinking that you're going to be spending the fall sort of juggling with other guys fighting in this kind of Hunger Games series that we're going to have for position next year on the PGA Tour, to suddenly you're the cusp of making it all the way to Eastlake. And to do it with such a bizarre calmness about him, that was the amazing thing.
Wire to wire.
He didn't stumble at all. It's the same way as watching Celine Boutier yesterday. You go in there with a big lead, don't stumble, actually build on the lead, and just kind of cruised to victory. JT Poston tried to make it interesting at the end, and he absolutely had to try to go for it. He was three back when he hit in, on the water in 18. But at no point did Lee Hodges do anything that was going to put himself under pressure. And to me, that was the most impressive part of the victory.
I tell you, players might be calling him instead of sports psychologists. He said Saturday he felt like he was playing with house money on Sunday. To try to win for the first time in your PGA Tour career, and you feel like you've already, you know, I've got my card for next year. I'm playing with house money. And then to go out there and show it, that's quite a strong presentation.
And he hadn't made a top 10 on the PGA Tour since, I believe it was Congaree. His best finish on tour this season was Congaree, tied seventh last October in the CJ Cup. But he did tie for 12th at both the Genesis Scottish Open and Memorial. And in a way, that's a little bit revealing as well. Two very different golf courses, but two of the strongest fields that we've seen during the course of this summer on the PGA Tour. And to me, that maybe was a little bit of a hint there that this guy can actually go toe-to-toe with some pretty big names in the game.
Wish I could play golf like I was playing with house money. Now, from one Bama alum to another, the struggles of Justin Thomas. I mean, it's been remarkable. A different tale from missing the cut at the 3M Open. He's missed five cuts in his last seven starts. Absolutely not accustomed to being where he is at this point in the season. 79th in the FedEx Cup standings. We take a look at the all-important bubble. 70, Austin Eckroat, the bubble boy, trying to make it into the FedEx Cup playoffs. So JT has a lot going on, trying to make it into the playoffs, trying to get the attention of the U.S. Ryder Cup captain in Zach Johnson.
You make the Ryder Cup team if you haven't made the playoffs?
I
are they connected?
I think they might be. And listen, JT is a big boy, and he has big-time goals, often shares those goals with the media kind of toward the end of the season. In fact, often will share the cell phone screenshot at Eastlake, coincidentally. I just think it's going to be tough for him when you look at where he sits, currently 14th in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. What does he have to do this week at the Wyndham, considering the players he has to, you know, perhaps leap over, for example? I mean, you know that Max Homa has already won twice this season. He's 7th in the world as well as 7th in the standings. Cameron Young, you know, T6 of the Deer, T8 at the Open. 9th on the list is Jordan Spieth. 10 is Keegan Bradley. 11, Colin Morikawa, who had the clinching point at Whistling Straits. 12th is Ricky Fowler, who won the Rocket Mortgage. You know, Sam Burns is 13th. He won the match play. Talk about, you know, match play bona fides, and was also in the 2022 President's Cup. So there's just not a lot of wiggle room for JT. We know the resume is strong. Pairs like a nice Merlot and steak with Jordan Spieth during all of these incredible, you know, Ryder Cup and President's Cup moments. But the form isn't there right now. And I guess the question boils down to, is it form or is it history for Justin Thomas?
I would argue it's neither when it comes to the Ryder Cup. Yes, the form isn't there. If we're going to go by form, there's not only 12 players playing better than Justin Thomas right now. There's dozens of guys playing better. But it's not form. It's heart and soul. And if you can find me 12 guys who bring more of that to a Ryder Cup team than Justin Thomas, then Europe should just run up the white flag right now. But there aren't 12 guys who bring more of that to a Ryder Cup.
You got to make putts in the Ryder Cup, too. You got to have heart and soul, but you got to make putts.
Form and match play is very different to form in stroke play events. And just the elixir effect of being in a team environment, of feeling that you're carrying your buddies with you. We've seen what that has done to JT in the past. We saw it even on the European side with Shane Lowry at the last Ryder Cup. He's kind of the heart and soul, losing effort, but he was very much the heart and soul of that team. And I think that's what you're going to see with JT. I think it's a huge assumption that Zach Johnson's not going to pick him. I would be shocked if Justin
Thomas
is not on the flame.
I don't think heart and soul is an issue. I think heart and soul was an issue maybe pre Ryder Cup task force. I think the eyes of the American player are wide open at this point, and they are tired of being whipping boys for Europe, especially overseas. And yes, Justin Thomas would bring a wealth of experience, but how many times have American golf fans stood and watched Colin Montgomery on the 18th green somewhere in Europe, most likely, making a putt on the 17th or 18th green and knocking out an American stud? We've seen it for time immemorial. And I think that at this point, you want to make sure that you've got, yes, heart and soul, but also the form to get the job done when you haven't won on the road since 1993.
No, and I think a lot of it might depend also in terms of the setup of the Marco Simone golf course in Italy. And that matters. I mean, if you go back to 2018, Le Golf National in Paris, and the captain's picks, there weren't six of them back then for Jim Furyk, but they came under scrutiny. And Jim burned a pick on Phil Mickelson, who literally could not have hit French territory if he teed off from the top of the Eiffel Tower. That's how bad he was that week. And it showed up, and it cost a Ryder Cup. I mean, it was pointless picking Phil that week. I don't think the same argument can be made of JT here. Yeah, the form isn't there. He's 159th in putting, the worst he's ever been.
That's what I'm saying.
The slightly worrying thing is that it's starting to bleed into some of the rest of his game. He's 63rd off the tee versus 16th last year. He's 42nd in putting, or in strokes gained approach, versus 8th last year. So there are issues there, but I still think that in terms of that team environment and in alternate shot, might be a bit of an issue if he's wayward. But if you're talking best ball, and he still brings that fire in singles, and you cannot teach somebody the fire. There are a lot of flatline guys who are on the lineup for this Ryder Cup. He ain't one of them.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see what Captain Zach Johnson ultimately does with those six captains' picks. And speaking of Europe, it was absolutely brutal on Sunday at the Senior Open at Royal Porthcawl in Wales as the PGA Tour champions battled the elements. Our good buddy Robert Dameron made his Senior Open debut last week and lived to tell about it barely. He'll explain the good, bad, and ugly when Golf Today returns. Check out this story. This is the last week of majors on PGA Tour Champions. The players teed it up at Royal Porthcawl. It was absolutely nasty at the Senior Open. The weather, Wales, brutal, to say the least. I mean, you know, they're used to it over there in Wales, but the players had to really layer up from time to time. You put the beanie on. There's Alex Cheka trying to somehow deal with the wind and the wetness. And you know what? I mean, he actually outlasted everybody, including a three-time major champion, Padraig Harrington, in a playoff.
And despite losing his opening tee shot, you don't often see the leader of a major championship lose a ball on the first tee shot of the day.
Yeah. How about the fact, Eamon, that no players broke par over the weekend? I mean, pot bunkers were gobbling up shots left and right. You got the fescue. I mean, it looked, I would have shot 150 out there.
26 guys didn't break 80 yesterday, Damon. JT was watching. He said, not going to lie, can't stop watching the Senior Open, a proper Lynx Golf weather day. It was absolute carnage for those guys, and I'm sorry, but it is fun to watch. And he was vouched for by Vijay Singh, who was out there in the middle of it at one point wearing two hats. It was carnage, Vijay said.
Short and sweet and to the point. Our good buddy, PGA Tour winner Robert Dameron, made his PGA Tour Champions debut of all weeks last week. Put this out on Twitter ahead of the start, saying, first tour sanctioned event in 10-plus years. Not sure if I'll feel calm or lose control of my faculties on the first tee. Time will tell. Then after the first round of the Senior Open, plus six today, he hit as many good shots as I did god-awful putrid ones. And he continued, note to self, stop hitting your golf ball into pot bunkers. Easier said than done. Robert Dameron joins us on this Monday. I'm just glad you went out there and put yourself out there in front of the best players in the world. First of all, what was it like just being out there, buddy?
It was great. I had the best time. I always loved going over there, even though my game just has never suited that kind of golf. It's really and truly, people think, oh, you have to keep it low and control it with the wind. That equals ball striking. That was never my strong suit. So if you're hitting it on the button, the wind doesn't affect it quite as much. And I wasn't quite hitting it on the button. I didn't hit it badly. But like I said in that tweet, you know, you got to keep it out of the pot bunkers, especially off the tee. I started the golf tournament with one in the pot bunker. I found myself in many a pucker snatch, plugged right up against the – or not plugged, but pushed right up against the face where you just got to go out sideways. But – what a great time. What a great experience. And I did not lose control of my faculties on the first tee. I actually was far more calm than I thought I would be.
Robert, your last tour sanctioned start was at Sanderson Farms in 2013. And you've been pretty open, certainly in conversations we've had about your issues with the game and the struggles that pushed you out of the game and into broadcasting. How nervous were you going back into this kind of setting?
You know what? I didn't sleep much the night before. I kept thinking about the first tee, the possibilities. The anticipational anxiety had me pretty strong. Like, what's the worst that you can imagine happening on the first tee of a golf hole? I mean, maybe a lion comes out of the stands and mauls you to death. And that wouldn't have been as bad as some of the things that I was thinking. Although, when my name was announced, And I put the tee in the ground, it wasn't that bad. I mean, a little nervous, but I've been far, far more nervous in different golf situations. So I really was happy with the way I handled myself, with my patience. You know, my putting was excellent. It was excellent. My chipping was really good. The thing is, and we've talked about this, gentlemen, both of, or all three of us at some point, the driver struggles are real. I've come long way. I mean, I've done hypnotism quite a bit to try to get rid of some of those bad thoughts with drivers. I've tried everything you can imagine, and I've made strides, but they still showed up a few times, just a few times too many. But overall, like I said, positive, great week.
Text me the number of that hypnotist, will you, before you forget?
Sure.
I'm curious what the prep is like, because I see you're wearing the Bay Hill shirt, but I know if I go to Bay Hill, I don't go find you on the range. You're at the poker game in the locker room. So what was the prep like to get yourself ready for this?
Well, it's hot as hell in Florida right now, so that's no preparation whatsoever to go over to Wales. So what I've been doing to try to get in front of the jet lag, or what I was doing, was getting up earlier each day, meaning 6, 5:30, 5 a.m. I kind of ended up getting up just before 5. And then it's sitting around making a coffee. As soon as the sun barely breaks, I get in my golf cart. I head out to Bay Hill somewhere on the golf course. As a matter of fact, the superintendent had me ran off a couple times because they didn't know like what was going on. Somebody's just out there on the golf course and didn't realize that it was, you know, me trying to get ready for, you know, some attempt at heaven knows what. But so that's kind of what I did. But that being said, it's extremely hot at 11, about 11. So I was done by then. By the time 3 o'clock rolled around, I was plenty ready for the card games. I'd done my work for the day. I'd done my honeydews around the house, done my golf practice, and card game, here we come at 3, no problem.
Damn, Ron, speaking of waking up early, when we used to wake up for morning drive way back in the day, I used to lean on you every single day. When are you coming back? You're going to play in the 15-over set. You're going to make a comeback. And you said no, no, no 100 times. Like, what pushed you to make the comeback in the first place?
Is this a comeback? I don't know. It's one tournament. You know what? I earned it. If you won on the PGA Tour, which I somehow, through grace of God, did, if you won on the PGA Tour, you're exempt into your first Senior British Open. So I had an exemption into this one. This is the one PGA Tour Champions event I know I was in. So I earned it. I haven't been in Europe in a long time. Probably not since Eamon, they ran him off. So it was time for me to go back and have fun. So I went over for fun. For expectations were nothing, you know, but I did work. I did come somewhat prepared. Now, the real question, Damon, is on the train ride back to Heathrow after my missed cut, even though I think I played pretty well, did I write exemption letters to other tournaments for the remainder of the year? Yes, I did. So I'm trying to play a little more. I do want to play more. I had fun. I thought I showed a lot of good and want to see if in the next event or the next event or the next event, does the good stay and the bad get a little better, or does the bad stay bad and the good dissolve? So those questions should be answered in the next tournament or two if I'm lucky enough to get into one.
How much attention did you pay to the Senior Open of Porthcawl after you'd missed the cut, Robert, because it was pretty brutal over the weekend? Rich Beam said to me it was the worst weather he's ever played in his entire professional career.
I certainly believe it. And the last time it was there was what I had heard was the worst weather of all time. As a matter of fact, Paul Goitis, when I told him I was playing in Porthcawl, he says it blows about 20 miles an hour there usually in your hotel room. So when you step out of your hotel room, that's when the real wind hits you. And that's what happened this weekend. I didn't have great weather on the first few days, but it wasn't horrendous. It's what you expect. I think Justin Thomas had it right. You know, I wanted to be playing, but man, that's the kind of fun golf to watch. You don't want to see this every week, but once in a while, that's what you want to see. You want to see guys struggle. It's Europe. You know, it's the United Kingdom. That's what's supposed to happen at times. And it certainly did happen. I didn't expect the scores to go that high. I mean, the final day scores were unbelievable. 6-over, 8-over, 10-over, just, you know, one after the other. I think Colin Montgomery, Hall of Famer, you know, he's from over there on that side of the ocean, shot, was it 88? You know, something he never dreamt he could shoot. So fun to watch, fun to be in the room watching, not fun to be part of.
Well, what was it like being back with the fellas, the guys? Was there any ribbing? Did they give you a noogie, welcome you back into the fold? What was the hang like?
They shove you in lockers, the swirlies, you know, with the hair in the toilet. It was great. You know, you do get to see a lot of the old guys. In a way, it's like a class reunion, going back to all your old friends and seeing them again for the first time in forever. And some I kept in touch with, some I don't. But that was honestly the best part of the whole thing, seeing my friends, seeing everybody, what they're up to, getting to see some of the players that I know what they're doing because they're still playing so well, and then getting to see some of the players that I don't see playing as much, and I'm wondering what they're up to and how their family is. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and honestly, I am looking to do it again over here in the States.
He's got the bug again, Damon. I think your work has finally paid off here. He's really back in the game.
Oh, it took me 5 years. I was leaning on him every morning. I'm happy for you, buddy. You acquitted yourself well. You look like you're in fighting shape. Best to Molly and the kids. And if you need any more help with writing letters, I'm sure Eamon will write some for you as well.
They can't understand the words he uses. That's the problem.
Good point.
Big, huge words. And they just wad it up like I do and throw it in the garbage. The same thing I do to his texts.
That's what my editors do all the time. Good spending time with you, Robert.
Thank you, guys.
Well, Ron Syrak has been covering the Evian Championship for 20 years, since before it was a major. And after the break, the Iron Man of women's majors will join us to talk Celine, slow play penalties, and superstars who don't show up. We'll be right back.
Back on golf today, let's take a look back at the LPGA major winners in 2023. April Lilia Vu of UCLA won the Chevron for her second win of the season, beating Angel Yin in a playoff at Carlton Woods. After winning, took the celebratory leap into the pond, tradition borrowed from the tournament's former venue at Mission Hills. Then in June, Ronin Yin won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Baltusrol for her second victory of the season, made that 10-footer for birdie on the 72nd hole to win by one over Yuka Saso. With the win, became the second player representing China to win a major following Shen Shen Feng's win at the Women's PGA in 2012.
And earlier this month, 25-year-old Alison Corpuz won the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach for her first LPGA Tour victory. Corpuz opened with a 69 and had four subpar rounds, finishing at 9 under par and a 3-stroke win over Charlie Hull and G.A. Shin. And then on Sunday, at the end of July, Frances Céline Boutier won the Amundi Evian Championship for her first major title. She's the first player from France to claim the Amundi Evian Championship since the event was designated as a major. It's also her second time winning a professional event in France, after also winning the 2021 Lacoste Ladies Open de France. And we're joined now by someone who's covered probably more women's majors than anyone else in this game, Ron Syrak. Ron, were you surprised by the steadiness that we saw out of Céline Boutier yesterday, given that she went into a home tournament surrounded by her family and friends with a 3-stroke lead and not only didn't wobble, but she actually built on it and really cakewalked her way to victory?
Well, you know, first off, I want to say whoever had those four players on their bingo card for having won the first four majors of the year, I want them to pick my next lottery numbers for me, you know. I think what we saw from Céline is the strong point of her game, which is control and focus. She hit the 56 out of 72 greens. She averaged 28 putts. She played under control. And really, when you consider the added pressure that she had trying to become the first French woman to win a major championship in France, she held up brilliantly on the final round. I wasn't surprised to see it because I think she's one of those players, you know, sometimes it takes a while for your belief to catch up to your ability. And I think she's finally starting to believe how good she is.
Well, what do you make of this run that we're on of first-time major championship winners in 2023? Gone are the days, seemingly, of the dominant superstar.
You know, having no social life last night, I decided to look around and say, okay, we got Inbee Park on maternity leave. She's got seven majors. Without her, who among active players have the most majors? Inji Chun and Anna Nordqvist have three majors each. 10 players have won two majors. 28 active players right now have won one major, including 22 of the last 23 majors played. I think part of what's going on here, and look, when I first started covering women's golf, rarely did somebody outside the top 20, top 30 win a tournament. Now we're seeing players who are well down on the list pop up and win. There was a stretch from the late 90s into the early 2000s when 20 of 24 LPGA majors were won by four players, Sorenstam, Webb, Inkster, and Siri Park. Now we're seeing the players who weren't on your radar screen popping up and winning. It just shows that number 156 or 144 or 120, the last person in the field, has a chance to win now. That wasn't true 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
But is that a positive sign of depth, Ron, or is it a worrying sign that the box office players just don't seem to be showing up for the job?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I do tend to think that the individual sports, golf, boxing, tennis, tend to do better in terms of attracting casual fans. When you have a clear king or queen of the hill that everyone's trying to knock off, you want to see a Mike Tyson or a Tiger Woods or an Annika Sorenstam get beat out there. But what we're seeing now is a very exciting era of parity out there. It's been disappointing this year that we haven't seen anything from Nelly or Lexi or Jin Young or Lydia or Brooke, really, you know, and it would be nice if they got more in the mix. But the fact is, I think it's more a strength of the tour right now of showing how broad and deep the pool's getting. That said, it would be great if somebody would claim this year as this is my year. And I've really rarely seen a year like this year where we're this deep into the year and no one steps forward and said, hey, I'm player of the year.
Carlota Segunda gave us a little bit of controversy during the week, Ron. The Spanish player was disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard because the card she signed did not include the penalty she was given for slow play. And she later put a post on social media saying that she felt as though she was being targeted, which is actually the point of slow play rules, is to target slow players out there. So it shouldn't really come as a surprise to her in that respect. What did you make of this controversy over the course of the weekend? It didn't really seem to reflect on her very well.
Look, I've known Carlota a long time. I'm very friendly with her. I've played with her in charity outings. She's a slow player. There's no question about it. She's a slow player. And I like the fact that the LPGA actually will impose penalty strokes for slow play, not just fines. The PGA Tour likes to go that fine route. Well, you fine somebody $2,000, $5,000, $10,000. That's not as impactful as a two-stroke penalty. Two strokes can cost you $250,000 out there. And I think that's the only way to alter that behavior is to go out there and institute stroke penalties for players who are out of position.
It's one thing to be slow, Ron. It's another thing not to be there at all. Lexi Thompson has not competed in this major since 2019. In her first three starts in this major championship, she has a third, a 10th, and a second-place finish. Do you think that Lexi Thompson will regret at some point in her career foregoing this very important tournament and major on the LPGA schedule?
Yeah, I was there when the whole kerfuffle happened that soured her on everything, which 2019, she missed the cut, and she put her bag in a van that was going to drive the golf clubs from Geneva to London for the Women's Open Championship. Wise caddies had started a business doing that, knowing that Heathrow is a black hole for golf clubs. Well, she put her passport in her bag, and it ended up that the bottom line was about 37 players missed their practice day on Monday because that got held up. She got really upset with everything and stepped aside. I think she is going to regret it. It's a good golf course for her. It's a kind of golf course where aggressive players like her should be able to do well. I think one of the other things that we saw is that I've noticed that more players who don't like the golf course have gotten more confident and comfortable speaking out about it. And players who didn't like it in the past, because that tournament has such great prize money, because that tournament's been so loyal to women's golf and treat the players so well, never wanted to say, you know, what their problems were with the golf course. But we're seeing more of that now. I noticed some of that on social media over the weekend.
So Rose Zhang, Ron, three majors as a pro, three top tens. Is she the best bet to keep this streak going of first-time major winners in a couple of weeks at the AIG Women's Open?
You know, that's not a bad call right there. You know, she is now, looking at it off the the Rolex rankings. She's on the Solheim Cup team. You know, she's made it into one of the automatic spots for there. I thought that she had a little bit of an emotional drain in the tournament before Evian. I thought Evian would get her back recharged, revitalized. I would not be surprised at all. In fact, I expect to see her name on the leaderboard on Sunday. I don't know what her track record is playing on bouncier golf courses, but it'll be interesting to see.
I'll put nothing past her. Ron, we've covered a lot of ground on this Monday. Thank you for the time.
Always a pleasure, my friends. Talk to you down the road.
Well, the newest USGA champion is in the house right after the break. Brian Kim won the U.S. Junior Amateur yesterday in South Carolina, and it earns him a spot in the U.S. Open next year across the border at Pinehurst, North Carolina. But even more exciting, he gets to talk to us. Brian will join us right after the break. Welcome back into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. And Damon, I got to jump on the Ron Czyrak train here. The LPGA gets a lot of criticism, but the one thing it does right that every other tour could learn from is the stroke penalties for slow play. The PGA Tour hides behind fines that they do not disclose. You can't hide behind whether or not someone's been given a one-stroke penalty. Saganda got one at the weekend that she deserved. There are a lot of other people who are out there on the PGA Tour, Champions Tour, who deserve the same.
And doing it in the light of day at a major championship. You know, I used to cover the AJGA, not week to week, but when Jordan Spieth made the cut at the Byron Nelson as a 16-year-old and was in contention. He later on played at the Thunderbirds out in Arizona, and I covered that event for Sports Illustrated magazine, and I was stunned at just how buttoned up the AJGA was in terms of time par. And those kids were moving. There were no slow players out there at the AJGA, lest they be docked strokes.
And, you know, we famously saw Tiang Langguan at the Masters receive a slow play penalty. But the AJGA deserves some credit as well. They're really actually trying to address this issue of slow play in this game, because it does metastasize into professional life as well with too many guys out there. But, you know, we certainly weren't seeing two guys who were lagging yesterday at the U.S. Junior Amateur.
No doubt. Speaking of the kids, what a duel in Charleston, South Carolina. Tell you what, Daniel Island Golf Club, I've been told I got to go. I hope to go at some point. That's the trophy they were playing for over the weekend, and some fantastic, notable champions back in the day. I mean, where do you want to go? How about Johnny Miller, 1964? The only time he competed in the event, won it. David Duval, 1989, Singing Hills Golf and Country Club in California. Tiger Woods, y'all, 91-93. Only two players have won this championship more than once. Jordan Spieth, the other. There's the recent Open champ, the lefty Brian Harman in 2000. There's Jordan Spieth, 2009 and 2011 as well. Scottie Scheffler, another UT alum, got it done in 2013. Will Zalatoris in 2014. A lot of folks wishing him well as he tries to work his way back to good health, beat Davis Riley 5-3. Brian Kim joins us now. Brian, congratulations. First of all, this was your third attempt at the U.S. Junior Amateur, but the first time you made it through match play. What was the difference this time versus the previous two?
Right. Thank you so much for having me. But I feel like I'm definitely a much better player this year than I have been the past few years. I've gotten a lot better in all parts of my game, but this year especially, I've been working really hard my putting and my short game, and that definitely made the difference this week just to make it through match play. And I felt like once I got to match play, anything could happen, and happened to win all six of my matches, so it's been pretty amazing.
Brian, I know you haven't probably had much time to look very closely at that trophy yet, but when you see some of the names on it, Tiger's on there three times, Spieth a couple of times, Scottie Scheffler, Johnny Miller. What does it feel like to see your name etched on a national trophy alongside guys like that?
Right. It's so surreal. I mean, the feeling really hasn't sunk in yet. It's been about 24 hours now, but just to see my name up with those guys, it just shows that I'm doing the right thing, and hopefully I can keep going down this path, do what I've been doing, keep working hard, and then hopefully I can end up with those guys at the end of my career. That would be amazing.
Well, you mentioned the six matches. You also had to deal with some challenging weather conditions, some starts and stops and long delays. How did you cope with the ever-changing conditions?
Right. The weather wasn't too too great this week, but the course, Daniel Island, they did such an amazing job. The course was in amazing shape despite all the rain. But I knew it would be the same for my competitors. So if I just kept the level head and just try to play my golf, that that would make the difference for sure. So I just try to pretend like there's no weather and just play some good golf.
Well, keeping a level head is easy to say in theory, but when you're tied with two holes to go in a national championship as you were, what were the nerves like in that closing stretch?
Right. I was definitely very nervous. Probably this is like the first time I've been on this big of a stage before, but I've felt really good about my game all week. I'm very confident in how I'm hitting it, how I'm putting it. So I felt like if I just try to stay in the moment, just focus on the shot ahead of me, that's all I could control. And basically what I, this whole week, I've just, especially in match play, you can't control what's going on around you, but you can't control what you're doing. So that's what I tried focusing on, especially on those last two holes.
Well, Brian, you hit so many amazing shots throughout the championship, but the gap wedge on the 35th hole to 7 feet, just take us through that entire process, because that was really where you started to put the hammer down.
Right. So I wiped my drive a little bit, but it ended up in the fairway, which was good, especially at the rough out at Ralston, Daniel Island. It's so thick, so it's definitely a big advantage being in the fairway. But I had about 113. There was probably the stiffest wind we've played in all week, and it was blowing the opposite of what it had been all week. So it was a little into on that hole, 113. I had a little bit of mud on the ball on the right side, but it was probably about a 10-yard win. Justin, my caddy, Justin Nogue, we played it. We settled on number 125, just flighted a gap wedge, had a little bit of backstop, and it came out perfectly. I thought at first it was a little too long, but the wind sort of knocked it down and ended up pretty good.
Brian, you're proof that winning a national championship doesn't necessarily lead to a glamorous life, because you've just spent 14 hours driving to Chicago for the Western Amateur this week. Do you feel more weight of expectation on Monday of this week than you did on Monday of last week now?
Not really. I mean, it's the feeling still hasn't really sunken in yet. I mean, but again, I'm just going to try playing my game. Hopefully it doesn't get to me, but I think if I do what I've been doing, it should hopefully work out.
You're on your way to Duke in the fall. Fantastic school, incredible academics and athletics. What are you most looking forward to just experiencing the college life?
I'm just excited to get there. I mean, my move-in date was originally August 18th, but depending on how far I get in the USAM, now that I'll be in Colorado this in a few weeks, I'll probably have to move in a little later, which I'm completely okay with. But I'm super excited just to get on campus and make a lot of new friends, and hopefully we can have a good golf season and hopefully make a difference.
Well, Brian, congratulations on winning the U.S. Junior Amateur. Congrats on all your success. Best luck this week. Greatness is greedy. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much.
And we're back on Golf Today. This week marks a very special milestone on Golf Channel, as School of Golf, streaming on Golf Pass, will air its 400th episode. For years, Martin has worked as an award-winning golf teacher, and each week he's brought his unique teaching style and some humor, insight to television with tips and drills, as well as answering viewer emails and interacting on social media as well. Great to have Martin Hall with us on this Monday. Congratulations, buddy. 400 episodes, so many instructions and tips. What are you most proud of?
Well, I'm shocked that it's got to 400. So hi, Damon. Hi, Eamon. Nice to see you up there. What am I most surprised about? Well, when I got the chance to do the show, Damon, I thought it might be 8 shows. And then when they said it was going to be more than that, I thought, well, you know, maybe it would be one season. And here we are 400 shows later. So I'm shocked about that. When we hit 100, I thought that's a lot. When we hit 200, I thought that's ridiculous. And Kevin Schultz, my boss, said, let's keep going till 400. I thought, you have lost your mind. There is no way we'll get to 400. And here we are. So what can I say? It's been great.
Martin, you've studied under a lot of teachers to become a teacher. Who most impacted you and how you do your job?
That's a great question, Eamon. I mean, certainly John Jacobs from Europe, Bob Toski, two of the greatest ever. And to this day, Bob's 97 in September, and he's still amazing. And to this day, I would say the foundation on which I base everything comes from those two men. And I've felt that my responsibility while I've been in front of a camera is to make sure that the wisdom of these two giants in the business never gets lost. That, you know, some people call me the bridge from the old ones to the younger ones, and maybe I'm a well-trodden bridge at this point in time. But, you know, I want to make sure that the wisdom of John Jacobs and many others, I mean, there's so many people who have influenced me, I mean, both players and teachers. I actually did a speech at the club at Ibis where I worked the other week, and it was about major champions. And I worked out that I've given lessons to, played golf with, or had on the TV show 46 major champions, 46 different major champions. So it's given me an encyclopedia of information to share with golfers around the globe. And it's been beyond any expectations I could have ever had.
Martin, from standing behind a player and just eyeballing their golf swing and where the ball moves, to using video, to using launch monitors like today, how has your own teaching evolved through the years?
I think that's a great question, Eamon. So, I mean, you're always trying to learn as a coach, as a teacher. You're always trying to improve your craft, as both of you are always doing. I think to a great degree, the measuring devices we get just confirm what's always been suspected. But it is nice to have things that can confirm measurements. The one thing I do say to all the younger teachers, though, is, look, all this technology is good, but just remember, it's good. It's not God. It hasn't got all the answers. You know, there's still an art to coaching and teaching. There's still an art to knowing when to say something, how to say it, when to say nothing. I think the information is great. But you've still got to present it in a way that John can play on Saturday morning with a thought or a tip, or Janet can go out on Sunday afternoon and think, oh, Blair and Martin said do this, and I'm going to give that a try. I mean, that's really the motivation for the show for me, to put it in, I suppose I'd say, digestible terms.
Now, Martin, as you know, Damon and I can barely get through one day here without some kind of mishap happening. There's no way you could get through 400 shows without some epic disaster or an embarrassing moment. What is the one you remember most from this run?
The one I remember the most terrifying one for me was, as you would know, the viewers might not know, but as you would know, as you get near to the end of the show, you've got a producer in your ear saying, okay, closing in 30, 20, 10, 9, and they count you down to the end. Well, the producer said to me, closing in, I lost my earpiece, then I lost the prompter, and then I lost everything. So I didn't know how we were going to finish the show, and I sort of stumbled through it. And it was, I would say it was terrifying to me, although it didn't look that terrifying when I watched it back. But live TV, as you both well know, it has its moments of being quite scary. That was probably the most epic disaster. I think the most difficult time was early on, when I had Tom Watson on the show one day and Nick Faldo the next day. And I'd only just started filming School of Golf. And I actually, we drive up from Palm City and we got about halfway there. And I said to him, well, turn around, I can't do it. I definitely can't interview Tom Watson one day and Nick Faldo. I can't do it. She kept me going. And of course, when I got there, I was fine because we talked about their favorite subject, their golf. As long as you're talking about their golf, they love it. So it was fine. But so there have been some scary moments, some fun moments, some difficult moments, some easy moments. But it's been an incredible opportunity and a platform to spread my message of golf across the globe now with Golf Pass, across the globe to millions and millions of golfers. And it's a privilege, it's a responsibility, but it's been great fun. It's been a heck of a ride.
TV can be scary. The short game can be scary as well. Since I have you, I'm going to ask you for a tip. I was in the backyard yesterday with my 60-degree wedge, and I noticed that I hit the ball kind of crisply when I release the club just a little bit, and that club face just rotates as opposed to kind of holding it off and getting the chicken wing. Are you comfortable with that? Will you confirm my feel for me, Martin, that a little release on a pitch shot, say, over a greenside bunker is okay?
I think you've got far too much thinking going on there, David. That's what I mean, I actually can't see you right now, but I suspect, could I see you in the garden yesterday, you might have had smoke coming out of your ears. That's way too much thinking. Keep it simple, lad. Simple. Too much.
Never mind him. I'm the one who actually needs help. I'm a much bigger challenge. I could make your reputation, Martin, or ruin it.
Got to keep this game simple. Probably the best advice I've heard. Martin, congrats on 400. 400 more, my friend. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Keep up the good work. Great to see you both.
All right, the legend, Martin Hall. We witnessed some dominant winners over the weekend. Speaking of legends, but how about some winners who didn't win, didn't come up with a trophy? We discuss next on Golf Today. And time now for winners who didn't win, didn't bring home the hardware, Eamon Lynch. Where do you want to go?
I'm looking at a guy who finished tied 10th out there, Cam Davis, Australian. And it was somewhat touch and go. He lost his tee shot left on 18, eventually took a drop, made his par 5 out there. He picked up $196,000. The more important number was 70 FedEx Cup points, because that moved him from 77th to 69th. In the FedEx Cup. And as we know, at the end of this week, it's the top 70. It used to be the top 125 made the playoffs. Now we're down to top 70 make the playoffs at the end of this week, where he's playing again. And he's not in that bubble by much right now, but it's better to be in looking out than out looking in.
Yeah, Kevin Streelman is out looking in right now, but he's my winner who didn't win. Runner-up finisher, his second top 10 of the season. He's 44 years of age. I just respect the hustle. This is someone who's qualified for the playoffs every year since 2008. This will be more difficult this year because it's only 70 spots, as you mentioned. He found something with his putting. I love the fact, like Brian Harman, has to go about it a different way. Has to make putts, has to get up and down. Not going to overwhelm a golf course in this era of the big hitter. I love Kevin Streelman's professionalism. It was on display this week in the Twin Cities.
That really is a great testament to consistency when you're never going to overpower a golf course if you're Kevin Streelman. But he's so even-keeled as a character, and he's 16 years in a row he's kept his card out there and made these playoffs. That really is, given the power era that this game has moved into, where everyone's kind of younger, stronger, longer than you are, and to still be there while other guys are scratching around trying to figure out where they're going to play next, that's a testament to a guy who knows what he's doing from the neck up.
Yeah, Kevin next is going to play at the Wyndhams.
Well, there's a lot going on in golf these days, and some of it is even happening inside the ropes. We're going to tackle the latest issues on and off the golf course with a couple of seasoned and occasionally cynical reporters. Coming up next.
Back on Golf Today. On Sunday, it was Celine Boutier who captured her first career major and did it in her native country of France. Final round 68 for Celine to cruise to a six-shot win in the Evian Championship. On the PGA Tour, it was Lee Hodges who entered the winner's circle on the PGA Tour in dominant fashion. Led wire to wire at the 3M Open, finished with a final round 67 to win by seven.
And over on the PGA Tour Champions, it was Alex Chayka who persevered in through brutal, though delightful, conditions. 26 guys couldn't break 80, but he walked away with the Senior Open title held off Padraig Harrington with a birdie on the second hole of a playoff. And to digest all of this, we're now joined by a couple of guys who know a little something about persevering in challenging working conditions. Golf Channel's Todd Lewis and Taylor Zarzar, host of The Starter, weekdays on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. And Taylor, I want to start with you. It's Wyndham Week. You've been going to this tournament for a really long time. One look at the field would suggest that this is a tournament that's actually benefiting from this new setup on the PGA Tour, with some events elevated and some non-elevated.
There's no question. You think the top 70 in the world, or top 70 on the PGA Tour, rather, are playing or trying to make it into the playoffs. And then you've got guys like Adam Scott, Justin Thomas, Shane Lowry, Billy Horschel that are all outside the top 70. Some of those guys traditionally wouldn't play in the Wyndham Championship, and they are this year. So without a doubt, this has significantly improved the field at the Wyndham Championship. You could argue it's the best field they ever had. Clearly, they know it's a T. Lou home game this week. Todd Lewis is in Greensboro, and all the stars are shining.
Well, I want to get to that, T. Lou. I probably imagine you feel this week like I do during Riviera Week or a U.S. Open at the Los Angeles Country Club. What's it like for you to see this tournament evolve?
Well, it's been great. I mean, when it originally came out on the schedule, the Wyndham Championship seemed to be in a tough spot because it was the last tournament up against the playoffs. A lot of the stars were, you think, weren't going to play here. But we've had Tiger Woods play here. We've had a number of other stars play in this event. And now, as Taylor was mentioning, with the fact that only 70 are making the playoffs, there are far bigger names that are going to have to play this event if they were to play the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's a great Donald Ross golf course. It's got a lot of history with Sam Snead. It's one of the oldest golf tournaments on the PGA Tour. The community supports it. Charities get involved and they benefit from it as well. So this is obviously, it's dear to my heart, but this is one of the premier tournaments in my opinion on tour.
Well, T. Lou, what's at stake for Justin Thomas this week, trying to get into said playoffs, trying to do something to get the attention of Zach Johnson? What's at stake for him this week?
You know, I was sitting actually in that chair a couple of weeks ago, and I was sitting with Amy. I'll finish up what I was saying there. And I was sitting there with Eamon. We were talking about Justin Thomas. And I said, I'm not worried about Justin. He's too talented. He's going to be able to fight through it. Well, now I'm worried about him. I think it's in his head. He's been an accomplished junior player. He's been an accomplished amateur, accomplished collegiate player. Now, maybe for the first time in his life, he's going through a professional valley. And he's having to mentally deal with this. I think he's pressing a bit. And if he could show up here at the Wyndham Championship and play with zero expectations and 100% confidence, I think he's going to be okay. By the way, his very first PGA Tour event was this tournament, the Wyndham Championship. He got in as a 16-year-old when he won a junior tournament. And in his first round, he shot a 65. He shot that number because he didn't really have a lot of expectations. He didn't really care. If he could have that same teenage mentality, I think he's going to do okay, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Taylor, it's a tough thing for JT to make the playoffs this week, but the decision on the Ryder Cup is in someone else's hands. If you're betting now, is he on that plane to Rome?
No, well, he's on the plane because he'll be an assistant captain or something like that if he doesn't make it into the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings. I don't know how, Eamon, you could put him on the team. If he's not going to play in these next three events, then he's not going to be able to show Zach Johnson that he's gaining on it. But based off of what Todd just said, I think if he finishes in the top 15, maybe top 12, it depends on how some of these other guys between 60 and 75 play this week. But if he finishes in the top 12 and he puts himself into the playoffs and then shows that he gains on it, continues that momentum in Memphis, then I think Zach Johnson wants to put him on the team. He wants to have a reason to put him on the team. But make no mistake, he'll be on the plane. He'll be helping Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler get ready for their matches, though, if he doesn't play well this week.
Taylor, I want to jump back to last week. Jay Monahan released a memo to players late night Wednesday talking about various issues related to this deal with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, how LIV players might potentially be recycled onto the PGA Tour. What was your reaction to that? I felt as though it sounded as though Jay Monahan was trying to buy himself time. There weren't a lot of specifics to offer players right now, but he's promising that there's something out there that he just can't quite tell them what it is yet.
It felt kind of like the article that you published in Golf Week that he was trying to buy some trust or gain some trust, I guess I should say, from the PGA Tour players. And you certainly can understand that given how tumultuous the 2023 calendar year has been for Jay and has been for the PGA Tour. At the end of the day, Eamon, I think it's going to be incredibly challenging for the PGA Tour to penalize LIV players when they're entering into an agreement, a new partnership with LIV and with the DP World Tour and with the Public Investment Fund. If this is all going to shake out where they're all playing under the same partnership, I don't know how you could penalize the players that went to LIV. At the end of the day, I think that's going to be extremely challenging to do. But I think there's no question that that memo's purpose was to try to say, guys, I've got this under control. I'm fighting for you. I want you to be able to believe in me again. That felt like what the purpose of that memo was.
Yeah, and I want to add on to that. That's the that's the mission statement right now for Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour, because there are still, I would say, maybe a large majority of players that feel that they can't trust the executives, specifically Jay Monahan, in regards to what happened with the announcement of this framework agreement with the Saudis. They felt, you know, some of them still feel betrayed, and some of them have been open and talking about it. Not every one of them, but I think it has gone from a boiling point to a simmer. And right now, the main objective for the tour at Monahan is to gain the trust, get in front of individual players, not in large groups, in small groups, maybe one-on-ones, and say, look, we're working for you. I think all of them feel like his heart is in the right place. They just want to be included in the conversation.
It may be a simmer now, Taylor, but it seems like at any moment it can bubble over. Phil Mickelson, of course, went on social media saying that I can guarantee no LIV player wants to even play on the PGA Tour. I mean, what a colossal waste of time. Not a single player on LIV wants to play PGA Tour. It will require a public apology and restitution to LIV players for paying millions to clout media to disparage all of us. A better topic is future sanctions for the many players who now come to LIV. Is Phil Mickelson right? Do you think that no LIV player wants a path back to the PGA Tour?
First of all, it feels like Phil is one of my friends that has a lot of time on their hands and spends too much time on Facebook just shouting at other people. I don't really understand what exactly he's trying to gain by doing all of this on social media. But to answer your question, Damon, I've spoken to a number of LIV players who say exactly the opposite of what he said. Certainly, I could see Phil or Dustin Johnson or Lee Westwood or a guy that's in their 40s, established player that doesn't need to play in the PGA Tour, not wanting to go back and be in that world again. But you can bet there are dozens of LIV players that would love to play PGA Tour designated events and PGA Tour events that are close to their communities that had something to do with long-term sponsorships that they had. They absolutely would love to do that again. Now, maybe they would also like to play LIV as well, but the idea that they don't want to go back to the PGA Tour, that's not what I'm hearing for a number of guys that are in their 20s and 30s that are playing on LIV.
Todd, there are a lot of guys who aren't going to play the 3 weeks after Wyndham, not just the LIV guys, but a lot of guys who just simply aren't going to make that top 70. We've known that it was 70, 50, 30 for these three playoff events since the end of last year. Do you think at this point, now that the reality's here, that there's any kind of buyer's remorse out there where guys start to think, yeah, maybe that number's a little too low?
You know, that's a good question. I do think that we might hear a little bit of that chirping after this event, the Wyndham Championship. But I do also think that if you want to be considered one of the best players, you have to be a consistent player. And that's what this FedEx Cup regular season is set up to do, and give yourself an opportunity to go into the FedEx Cup playoffs and then make that golden run and ultimately win the FedEx Cup. So, yeah, I think you might initially, as you know, if you think about it, dating back to 2007 when the FedEx Cup started, there's always been some griping and some chirping, some criticism, and there probably will be a little bit of that here over the next few weeks. But ultimately, after things settle down, I think the players and the fans especially will say, hey, this is pretty good having the top 70, the best of the best, compete in the FedEx Cup playoffs.
No shortage of things to chew on. That's the way we like it. T-Lew Taylor, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the week in the Carolinas.
Did Damon call you got it, cynical?
That was the head of my
seriously.
Left.
Like you proved my point.
Great stuff, gentlemen.